You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
Happy Friday to everybody. Off into your weekend. You've made it through the week. We're getting closer to spring. A lot going on in the city today. The Bears are making moves. They have released a couple of their veterans. Prince Amukamara has been released. Not a big surprise there, though he did have a good run with the Bears. $9 million, too expensive with a cap situation the Bears are nursing. And Taylor Gabriel, another guy who had a great 2018, fought the concussion issues last year and the production down for the whole offense for the year. So they've released them. And $13.5 million, according to most of the Bears beat writers, will become available for the Bears, who have lots of holes. We know there are offensive holes with the offensive line, with the tight end situation. Maybe a quarterback. I mean,
well, you got to sign somebody.
Yeah.
They've only got one on the roster right now.
And they still have some defensive issues they've got to figure out. What are they going to do with Leonard Floyd? What are they going to do inside linebacker? What are they going to do with the safety next to Eddie Jackson? It's not Clinton Dix. I don't think he's back.
No, I don't believe so.
You've got to be able to free up Eddie Jackson to roam and to do what he does best to force turnovers.
Maybe finally Deion Bush gets an opportunity to play full time. Maybe they find somebody else out there in free agency, but I'm with you. I don't think Clinton Dix, my guess is he won't be back.
So there's that. The NFLPA did not go to a vote on the agreement that they have negotiated with the owners. The owners approved this yesterday. We thought there would be a vote today. The NFLPA released something that they look forward to meeting with management next week. So they are going to probably look to maybe get some more concessions. Andrew Brent will join us at 4:15 to tell us if that's possible. Whenever this does happen, we do know that it will still be a 17-game schedule, and the extra playoff team per conference will happen. It's just a matter of when they do vote this, and they're looking for some other things for the players to sweeten it, so they will say yes to a 17-game schedule. There's that, and there's baseball to discuss with the Houston Astros and the Big Poppy story, where Mike Fiers continues to take the brunt of it from Big Poppy regarding being a, quote, snitch.
Let me give you a real quick comment as well from this article that Jesse wrote that caught my eye. It's titled MLB Managers GMs Weigh In on Sign-Stealing Proposed Playoff Format. It's a really long article. It's really good as they talk to the different GMs and MLB managers. And something caught my eye from Oakland Athletics GM David Frost. Quote, I don't know that we're doing anything differently. We've had these concerns for the last couple seasons, not only going into Houston, but other places. And it goes on to talk a little bit longer. This is my question. I mean, really? Is Houston the only place where this happens?
And
is
you Boston know the answer. The only place? Answer. You know the answer. There are 30 teams. You think they're 2 of 30?
How bad is it in other places? It's obviously not garbage can banging bad, but I find it hard to believe that the only place that the hanky-panky with technology aided is going on in Houston and Boston. I refuse to believe that's the only case. So we'll find out. I'm looking forward to the commissioner's report on the Red Sox coming out soon.
Which sport do you think has benefited most from technology of any of the sports?
Oh, wow, that's interesting. In terms of the game itself,
yes,
or how it's consumed?
Has it been, because I would assume it's baseball, because analytics in baseball is probably most prevalent, where they do things, everything by math. And it's 30 like-minded general managers now. So my thinking is, while that's not cheating, they have used technology. So other people think, well, we're using technology. Now let's use our technology here while the game's going on.
Yeah, that may be. I think they're using it everywhere. I mean, basketball's using it for, you know, the number of steps guys take.
Right.
I think football's obviously used it as well. Maybe baseball is they've had the greatest use of technology.
I mean, they count the spins on the baseball.
Yeah.
You know, they got the exit velocity. Think about everything the way it's judged now differently. The art of scouting is now all measured by these analytical measures.
And maybe that's it opens the window more so for the sport for hanky panky to to set in.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Chris, you have something for us that you wanted to bring to the table.
Chris Black, everybody.
He's in for Meller today. Meller worked with the Catman, and he's off to the ski slopes.
And speaking of the Catman, were you guys listening to David Kaplan earlier this morning?
I was not. I had to walk the dog. I put a chair together in my office.
Ooh, what kind of chair?
A chair for my desk.
Like a throne?
He's got that already.
You could call it a throne, but it doesn't look like a throne. It's just a
nice leather chair. Is it a nice, comfy leather chair?
It's very comfortable. It's kind of cheap. It's, you know, it's like $90, but it's like, you know, cheap leather. But I just had to put it together.
Would have been a perfect time to listen to Cap. I mean, while you're putting together, it's not like you got to.
I was watching CNBC and the market going up and down,
trying to get
mostly down.
Trying to get his chicken.
Yeah. Trying to watch. I was watching my chicken.
All right, so I heard early, but then I was running around doing some errands.
Okay.
Then I heard later and on the ride home.
All right, perfect.
On the ride here.
So hopefully you guys have yet to hear this audio. I was listening earlier today, and I think it would be a fun game to play. Cap out of context. I'm going to play a clip of Cap talking. You guys will then guess
what he's talking about.
Oh, this is fantastic.
And then we will play the full reveal on what the actual conversation's about.
Okay. So let's do this weekly. I know you're on the Cap show.
You guys can have it.
Cap,
enjoy.
This is context.
For you. Yeah. So let's go to our big voice, Cap Out of Context.
It's now time to play Cap Out of Context.
I think I've heard you before doing over the CB at one point.
We had to improvise for the open. So here we go. This is audio from this morning.
Okay.
David Kaplan, you guys listen afterwards. Tell us, what is Cap talking about?
If I said I got this and I turned the mic on at 9 o'clock and went for the next 20 minutes and you're like, you're out of your mind. And I'm like, no, that's how I do a show. And that's what I did. And the ratings came out and went, boy, in the first 15 minutes when you're doesn't work, I would think that an intelligent human being would go, you know what, Danny, you might have been right. I probably shouldn't.
Isn't that what he does anyway?
Big voice, go.
That was Cap Out of Context.
I think I know.
Context.
I think I've got a good idea.
Can I guess?
Sure, go
on. He was discussing Ryan Pace's process for actually picking Mitchell Trubisky ahead of the other two guys.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay, fair.
Usually he doesn't make that sound with his mouth when he's talking about Ryan Pace.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
I thought the late show was for the adults.
No, Sylvie from way downtown.
I think that's about Javi Baez and Joe Maddon, a lack of preparation, and when that stuff is going on, a correction should be made by the manager.
All right, let's play it. Cap in context. Here's the full minute clip.
Just like they can't move away from Mitch, the Bears, Halas Hall in general, has a problem admitting mistakes. So if this preseason Mitch plays the first half of every game or plays a lot more, once again, Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace are admitting, hey, we made mistakes in the past. And that's just something that they don't seem to do.
But what great people do. Danny, if I said to you, guys, I got this.
Cap, we're not talking about great people. We're talking about the Chicago Bears front office and their head coach.
If I said to you, I got this, and I turned the mic on at 9 o'clock and went for the next 20 minutes,
maybe
you're like, you're out of your mind. And I'm like, no, that's how I do a show. And that's what I did. And the ratings came out and went, boy, in the first 15 minutes when you're doesn't work.
He's
I would
good at
think that an intelligent human being would go, you know what, Danny, you might have been right. I probably shouldn't.
I don't know what he was saying.
I mean, he's saying when you make an obvious mistake, it should be corrected as opposed to just saying, well, I want to be proven right even though the measurements are showing that I'm wrong. I speak Cap.
No, that's how I do a show. And that's what I did.
Do I get partial credit?
Yeah, you were pretty close.
Yes. Congrats. I thought it was about like preparing and just like correcting. I knew it was about correcting an issue. But
thank you for playing the stupid game.
Is that the only one?
That was the only one.
We have found our Friday contest.
Yeah, there it is.
We will do this, and we should do it with the listener. We're for the week, Chris. You'll get credit for the game. Throughout the week, you can give us some good three out of context things. You know, throughout the entire week, keep tracks, and then we'll do that on Friday and play the three best out of context.
I'm still, call me, maybe I'm a little softer. I've been hitting the head a way too often, but what was the part of it for?
That's the equivalent to drafting Mitch at number two instead of Patrick Mahomes. Yeah.
He's admitting Trubisky was trash. Yeah.
I probably shouldn't. I got this, and I turned the mic on at 9 o'clock and went, no, that's how I do a show. And that's what I did.
That should be the promo.
I was going to say, that I don't know if there's a better way to promote Cap Show. No, that is this is how I do a show.
I'm still lost. I'm still lost. Like, for whatever reason, my brain isn't firing correctly. I can't make sense of it.
It's fantastic. Oh, that's our new game.
You guys can have it.
Yeah,
go for it.
Yeah. Can you keep track of that during the week?
Yeah.
And send a note to Abdallah. I'm surprised you guys haven't done this for Bleck and Abdallah.
We've got good question.
Yeah, I know you, but you can always have more. That's really good stuff. Do you see Patrick Mahomes, too, by the way, was throwing the football around with Dez Bryant?
I did not see that. I didn't see it.
Hey, have you recovered from All-Star Weekend here in Chicago?
Yeah, I have. I've gotten back to working out. I shoot some hoops. I drink some beer. I was shotgunning beers with Kelsey. That dude is crazy. And I'm back to working out, man. It's a 12-month-a-year job.
Speaking of crazy, do you guys have room for Dez Bryant on the team?
Hell yeah. Another target. I got all the life in my arm I need. I just need guys to catch it. Every now and again, our guys get in trouble, too, so I may need to bring somebody in.
Does this mean you're going to have to get rid of somebody because you're signing a new deal?
No. We make him play left tackle if we have to at times. We'll find a spot for him. We'll win 10 of these.
Andrew Brandt is going to join us next. This guy's got great perspective. He's formerly a player agent, and then he was one of the top guys negotiating contracts with the Packers. So he knows owner's side, he knows player's side, and he follows the NFL closely. How does he believe this negotiations is going to end? Andrew Brandt coming up next, and Al Michaels at 4:30.
No, that's how I do a show. And that's what I did.
Coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
There's no deal yet between the owners and the players. I do believe there's going to be a 17-game schedule between 2021 and 23, and I still think there will be the extra playoff game per conference coming up here in the next year. But there is a holdup, at least now. And one guy, Waddle, that since we've been on the air that we have loved talking to through the years when it comes to the smart people stuff.
That's right.
And that's not us, is Andrew Brandt, who used to work for ESPN, does great work as a columnist for Monday Morning Quarterback, does podcasts with the business of sports and all that. And like I said, going into break, he's worked for the Packers very high up negotiating contracts, and he's been a player agent. So he knows both sides of the sport when it comes to negotiating. And Andrew joins Waddle and Sylvie right now. Andrew, how have you been?
I've been well, guys. Obviously a busy day. And again, I'm going to pile on that ego boost you just gave me, because I just heard a direct message from one of the players that was voting on this today. And they said they were reading my tweets. So they're listening in on some public sentiment as well, and it's interesting that we were, and maybe are again next week, at the precipice of a new 10-year collective bargaining agreement, when I just remember, as you mentioned, with covering it for ESPN last time, where it was a lockout and decertification and court cases and expiration and signing a deal hastily on the eve of training camp. But I think everyone needs to know we're 13 months away. It's okay. Take a breath.
Right. I was going to say, so in layman's terms, because I know we could get into the weeds here with a lot of technicalities, Andrew, for our football fans driving in their cars right now, what can you tell them about the basics with this currently?
Well, I think the key things you've mentioned, what have we heard from players the past 1, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 years, which is never, no way, no how, we're going to play more than 16 games. And the NFL is being disingenuous, even offering that, because of their emphasis on health and safety. Well, things change. Money talks. So I always wondered, first of all, I said, there's no way we will have a CBA without extra games, because that's the only thing the players have of true value to the owners to get concessions. So the issue becomes, what are the concessions for giving up that extra game of inventory, that extra wear and tear? And the concessions basically come down to this. The revenue split was 50-50 10 years ago. It changed to about 53-47 in favor of the owners. And the owners were willing to take that up to 48 and then 48.5 for the players. And that's sort of the nuts and bolts of the deal, gets down to those two topics, 17 games for a point and a half, which is worth about $5 billion over 10 years. Is that enough? In my opinion, not really, because it's a 10-year deal. It locks players in. The economics of the NFL are going to change dramatically with new TV and digital media. If you're going to go to 48.5, why wouldn't you go to 49 in 5 years? Why wouldn't you go to 49.5 in right. 7 years? Why wouldn't you go to 50 in 8 years or have a shorter deal? That's one of the things I think are deficient in the players' offer right now.
Is the biggest focus here for the players, Andrew, the money, or are there other things that are important? Now, having been in these meetings before, right. I understand. I'm asking a question. I think we all know the answer to money's most important. But as I heard someone say a while ago, you're going to be a former player much longer than you are a current player, so keep that in mind.
Yeah.
How about, you know, not agreeing to any type of a situation where you would play a game on Sunday and then play on Thursday? How about some of the other issues? Roster size, guys that are, you know, instead of 53 going to 55, to me that's too small. And on Sundays, 46 to 48, again too small. Are these issues that the players are stressing about, or are these just ancillary issues and it's all about the cash?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think you point out what the owners are doing strategically. These incremental offers, which I don't think, frankly, are big gives by them. Yeah, we'll go to 55. Well, you're going to get an extra game. You're going to give up two players that are making minimum. Okay. Yeah, we'll go to 48 active. Well, why don't you just do 55
yes.
active? I know there are injuries and all that, but these are incremental changes, and the one thing that the owners always give in these negotiations that drives the coaches nuts is less practice, less padded practice, less contact in the off season. That's an easy give for the owners
right.
because the players like it, the owners like it, the only one that hates it are the coaches, and they're not part of this negotiation. So it just there's more of that in this deal. Less time, a five-day acclimation period. Instead of just ramping up to a two-a-day in the first day of camp, there would be a mandatory five-day chill-out period, have meetings before you get to the training camp. Now, I think that's good because I dealt in Green Bay. It was automatic. The first 2 days, we'd have hamstring pulls and calf pulls and all that. So maybe they don't need 5 days, but that's in there too.
Obviously, this deal will be better than the one signed in 2011. That's universally agreed to, right? Because that, looking back in time, that was not one where the players came out with a very good situation. Is that a fair statement?
It's fair. The problem is, and you know this, every deal begets the next.
Right.
The starting point for the players is rough because they don't have anything. They don't. You know, the franchise tag, that's all owners. The revenue split, that's owners. The commissioner power, that's owners. You know, it's like they're negotiating uphill based on that last deal. That's what makes it tough.
Andrew, why did the players agree to the revenue split decrease. It, as you said, it went from 50-50 to 53 owners, 47 or 48 players. And why isn't there, just in layman's terms, a 50-50 split between the players who play the most popular game in the United States and the owners who own the teams of the players that play in the most popular game in the United States?
Listen, I feel for D. Smith last time, really do, because he came into an untenable situation. The owners were intent on clawing back. They locked the players out. D and the players had a win in lower court, if you remember, but it went to the Circuit Court of Appeals. I remember standing out in the heat of St. Louis for ESPN, and lo and behold, that court ruled for the owners that the lockout could continue. Once they ruled that way, the litigation strategy was a loser, because now there are no more court dates, and the NFL was locking them out. So, as you remember, this hastily agreed to deal where the owners imposed their will and the players came back at that training camp. And again, that's okay. It's just the term is upsetting as someone that feels for the players. 10 years is an eternity. And to not have opt-outs is really unfair because the changing economics. And here we are doing that again.
Andrew Brandt joining us on the Corona Hotline. As Andrew mentioned, he had worked for the Packers in the past in the front office. So let me ask you a football strategy question with this new collective bargaining agreement that eventually will be approved. The 17 games, that means nine home games, eight road games. If you're in the Packers or the Bears front office and you have a pretty good team, and now all of a sudden with the extra playoff spot, the number two seed will have to play in the first round. How is this fair where a team could have eight home games versus a team with nine home games?
You know, it's amazing, guys, that talking to an owner today, they really don't have a plan. Because, I mean, the earliest it would be implemented, of course, is 2021. And they, you know, it could be nine games to the Packers this year, eight games next year, nine games to the Bears next year. And 8 and 9 and 9 and 8 switch off every year. It could be international. Now, we've got London games ramping up all the time. London could get a home schedule, meaning not a home team, but 8 games, 16 teams every other year. Teams play in London. Then you throw in Mexico, maybe Germany, maybe Toronto, maybe Vancouver. So all of that is in play. But if you think we have answers on that 17th game, you're mistaken.
Yeah.
Andrew, before we let you go, and we appreciate your time, as a former player, again, I see the game differently than I did when I was 24. Are we ever going to find ourselves in an environment where the Players Association and the owners agree to a scenario where lifetime health insurance will be available to players for the remainder of their lives?
You know, everything you mention is something that's been brought up in every negotiation the owners balk. And what that tells me is that's a hard give. That's a real sticking point for ownership. Maybe it's due to the way insurance is done this year, you know, this time of history. I know they're still fighting with insurance companies over these concussion payouts. There's litigation going on there. The insurance landscape of this country has convinced NFL owners to fight that. It is unfair. As you know, it's 5 years from retirement, then you're kind of on your own, and that's something I know the players have brought up, but it certainly is not in this deal, no.
Andrew, we always appreciate your time, and we love what you do, so thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Thanks,
always
Andrew.
Enjoyed, guys. Take care.
Andrew Brandt's really good, and if you don't follow Andrew, again, he used to work for ESPN. He has worked for the Packers. He's been a player agent, and now he works for Monday Morning Quarterback, does a podcast, does other things. Follow him at Andrew Brandt, and Brandt is spelled B-R-A-N-D-T. So good stuff with Andrew Brandt. There will be great stuff as well with Al Michaels. We have, I would say, the event that we're going to celebrate tomorrow, the 40th anniversary of tomorrow's event, outside of me rooting for anything Chicago, was probably my number one sports highlight. Number one, if it's not involving a Chicago team. Al Michaels will relive Miracle on Ice with us next.
This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home.
Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Liga Legionov gets checked by Ramsey. McClanahan is there. The puck is still loose. 11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Oh, it was one of the greatest sports moments of my life.
With I just
one
got
of,
the chills there.
One of the greatest calls of our lifetime. If you're older like Waddle and me, I'm 48. Waddle just turned 53. You remember what 1980 was like. And you remember Lake Placid in the Olympics that year and the tension between our country and the Soviet Union.
Yes.
And the way the world was so much bigger then. You know, it's a lot smaller now because of technology and we learn, but it was the height of so the Cold War, and there have been so many documents. There's been obviously a movie made that was in movie theaters in Miracle. Before that, Waddle, they did a made for TV movie on Miracle on Ice. And I remember watching this thing on tape delay when I was 9 years old.
Yeah.
And then we recorded it. And then they reran it, and I used to watch. I wore out that VHS tape for that call, for the Ruzioni goal right before that when he's going to his right, and then he risks it the going the other way. An incredible shot. And Al Michaels, who is always great enough with his time to talk football, to get Al to talk about the 40th anniversary of this call and this great game, which is tomorrow on the Corona Hotline. It's our pleasure to welcome him in again. Hi, Al.
Guys, how you doing? I'm in Las Vegas right now because the entire team has been brought here. And there's a little function tonight where everybody's going to get together. And then tomorrow the Golden Knights are in action against the Florida Panthers, and they're going to do a 20-minute pregame ceremony, bring all of the guys out onto the ice, and it should be very, very special. It's hard to believe 40 years. You, wow. You may have been, you know, Sylvie, you may have been 9. I was like 14 at the time.
So. Right.
Well said, Al. Well said. I just said to Sylvie when we were listening to this, you know, I just turned 53. I get chills every time I hear that. Do you get the same response when you hear yourself and you think about being there and going through that experience?
You know, Tom, the interesting thing is, I mean, clearly I've been listening to it and watching the tape, and it you know, especially at a time like this when the anniversary is around the corner. It's very funny. I know what's happening. I've seen the clip 1,000 times at least. And yet I've almost put myself now in the third person. I know what's happening. I know it's me. But I want to get outside of myself and go someplace else like everybody else in the country and just exult and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because I know what's going to happen. And you're right, I do get, you know, I do get some chills. My wife to this day, and she was there that night in the arena, same thing. My son and my daughter, the same thing with them. And it's a moment that it took place. When it's taking place, you have no idea. You know it's big at that moment. But you have no idea that 40 years later it would still resonate. So here we are, and 40 years later, it's just kind of crazy. And all the guys who are now in their 60s
right.
will be in Las Vegas tonight, and it's going to be a great night.
Al, forgive my ignorance. I'm sorry if I've asked you this question before, but I don't recall doing so. Maybe that's a sign of my age. But how did you get the assignment for this in the Olympics at that time?
Well, I was the only guy on a staff that included, this is the Mount Rushmore of announcers at ABC. At that point in time, you had Jim McKay, Howard Cosell, Keith Jackson, Chris Schenkel, Frank Gifford,
wow.
Bill Fleming, and a few other people as well. So I was kind of the new kid on the block, the young guy. I had joined there in 1977 full time. And somebody had to do hockey. I think the primary assignment that everybody wanted to have was speed skating, because Eric Heiden going to those Olympics was going to be the big star. Would he win 5 gold medals? He did, but nobody could foresee what would happen on the hockey rink. So when you're looking at the Winter Olympics, the big sports for television are figure skating, obviously, that does the biggest number. McKay was going to do that with Dick Button. You had alpine skiing up on the mountain. People loved that, too. And Frank Gifford and Bob Beatty were assigned to that because they loved the après ski scene as well as skiing itself. Keith Jackson wound up getting the speed skating, so I was minimally disappointed. I wanted to get that, but when I got hockey, I was pretty happy because I had grown up in New York. My father had taken me to minor league hockey with the New York Rovers at Madison Square Garden, and then when I became 8 or 9 years old, he would take me to the Ranger games. So I knew hockey. I was the only guy, I'm the only guy on that staff who had ever done a hockey game. I had done one. I had done one game.
Wow.
Nobody else on the staff had done any games. I knew how to explain icing and offside, and that's how I got the assignment.
That's unbelievable.
And believe me, guys, there was no miracle on the biathlon course that year. So I just wound up in the right place at the right time.
Right, right. And then, but then the, to put it into words, though, Al, I mean, it's the perfect soundtrack because, like you said, you put yourself now in the third person and you kind of take yourself like. It was such a big moment, and that moment would have always been huge. But to go with your soundtrack, I think, made it as iconic as any call ever.
I guess. And at that moment in time, and look, I'm very fortunate, and that's just the serendipitous for me. You know, it's funny, I saw an interview with Ken Morrow, who was the defenseman. He was a stay-at-home defenseman, had a great career in the NHL as well. Wound up winning 4 Stanley Cups with the Islanders after he left the U.S. hockey team in 1980. And the guys didn't think of it as a miracle. But like Morrow said, he said, it's a miracle because I said it. So that's where the miracle comes in. And look, I mean, to put a stamp on it like that, I mean, it's a thrilling thing for me. When I'm saying those words, though, I have no idea. I'm calling the game. I'm excited. The puck comes out the center ice. The Soviets have no last opportunity to mount a rush on Jim Craig. So with 5 or 6 seconds to go, there's a moment for me to say something, to cap it. Because up until that point, I'm just doing pass by pass, shot to shot. Because I don't want to blow anything. The place is going crazy. I have to work in an intense state of concentration. So the puck comes out the center ice, and then it's the kid in me. It's the fan in me. The word that came into my brain was miraculous. Somehow miraculous got morphed into a question and an answer, and away we went. But if you were to have said to me right after the game, what did you say? I don't know. I had just done a 2.5-hour hockey game working with an intense concentration level, and I put the stamp on it. And so it lives in perpetuity, obviously, and that's one of those moments in time. You just get lucky. You get fortunate. Because that game could have ended, you know, with a shot on goal, and I've got to call the game right up until the very end.
Right.
But when the puck came out to the center ice, and it's so funny because you guys played the clip. So just a little funny sidebar here. So Dave Silk is on the team. He played at Boston University, you know, a great forward on that team, a very instrumental part of what took place there. So I saw Dave about 6 or 7 years ago. He was out of the golf course, and I happened to be playing. He said, hey, listen, he said, you know, it's so great that you were able to get my name in at the end. He said, because a lot of people come up to me and they say, oh, you didn't play on the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team. He goes, hey, wait a second. I'm Silk, as in Morrow, up to Silk, 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? So there's so many stories like that with these guys, and I can't wait to get together with them again.
That's fantastic. The great Al Michaels joining us, Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. After that, did you always become a guy then who did every one of your calls, no matter the moment, just by ad-libbing? Or did you ever, like, think of something and jot it down in case that would happen?
You know, you have to go with your gut instinct, because if you jot something down, I mean, can you tell me how a game is going to end?
No.
I don't know how it's going to end or what. But it's funny because a couple of announcers, Major League Baseball announcers in the late 90s, called me to ask me what they should be thinking about because they could have wound up in the ballpark when either McGuire or Sosa broke Roger Maris's home run record. So they asked me what they should be thinking about. And I said, guys, you have this job because you're at a certain level professionally. You have to trust your instinct. Can you tell me if McGuire hits a home run, whether it's a line drive over the center field fence, whether it hits the foul pole, whether it's not that it really could happen, but an inside the park home run, a disputed home run? Tell me. you don't know what it's going to look like. So you have to you have to just trust your instincts. And I do know that if you go into a game and you think about what you're going to say, it sounds scripted. It sounds like, you know, a scripted television show. Right. It can't be that way. Are some calls better than others? Of course. But I've always felt, as was the case in Lake Placid, and guys, where I really got lucky there is how many events do you do where the audience is 99.99% going with you?
Right.
They want to see what you want to see happen. And I've always said, like, the 0.001% are KGB agents. They probably weren't happy. They weren't happy with that call. But who cared at that point? I mean, everybody's going with me.
Outside of your call, Al, as someone who's done this for so long, what other phrase has been, like, one of the best iconic calls ever? Like, is it the Giants win the pennant call? Is it Jack Buck saying, I can't believe what I just saw? Is it something Vin Scully did? Is there a call that you put up when you say, well, that's one of the greatest all-time calls ever?
Well, the Jack Buck call was terrific. He was on radio. And interestingly, that night in Los Angeles in the World Series Game 1 when Gibson hit the home run, Vinny was doing it on television. And I think Vinny's line, to paraphrase, was, in the year of the improbable, the impossible has happened. And I think that's as good as it gets. Vinny, you know, has had so many great lines through the years, but that might be my favorite.
Al, when athletes and guys get together over the course of years to celebrate championships, there's some embellishment that goes on. You know, guys become better players than they were back then, and guys laugh. I don't know how you can embellish on the greatest sports moment in history. What do you guys talk about when you all get together?
Huh. Well, yeah, you don't need to embellish,
right?
This, baby. I mean, this lives and sings on a different level than anything else. You know, it's funny, Arruzzioni, and he, you know, sees the guys a heck of a lot more than I do, and they had a 35th anniversary 4 or 5 years ago. And he said the interesting thing was they talked very little about hockey. They talked about where they were in their lives, and I think that's what happens. And look, it's not as if all of these guys are going back and talking about a 15-year career. Now, they did have it in the – some of these guys did play in the National Hockey League for 10, 12, 14 years. But when they get together, they know they're getting together because it happened. It happened. It happened over a fortnight. It happened, you know, over a weekend with the win against the Soviets and a win against Finland. It's one of those, just for these guys, it's a delicious memory that will never go away. And I think, as Mike Arruzzioni once put it, at least for him, you know, he says he'll go home every once in a while, and if he feels a little down, needs a little pick-me-up, to put the tape in. And he said the best thing about the tape, every time he shoots, the puck goes in. And it will forever.
It's amazing. By the way, on a football note, are you ready to do an extra game a year?
You know, I'm just tuning up my vocal cords right now because I'm not sure I can make it. Yeah, I guess. Hey, I don't know what they're going to decide. I'm kind of in the dark as to what's happened today. I've heard a couple of little headlines, but I guess the NFLPA, they did not vote. Is that right?
No, they didn't.
They're going to meet with the owners next week, and then hopefully maybe they'll get something else.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what they're going to do, but I do know one thing. They better shorten preseason. That's enough of that already.
Four weeks
is crazy.
What's your game of choice in Vegas? You go to any of the table games still?
You know that game that has dice and there's a felt with some numbers on it, the whole thing?
Yeah, a little bit.
Guys, that is, I mean, I got to tell you, at the 27-minute mark, if somebody has the dice, if you have the dice or if somebody at the table has it, that's as good as about anything in the world. I mean, crapshooters understand this. I mean, guys, we're at the table and the place is going crazy. Been a long time. I was here last night. Nothing happened, and I'm off to a slow start today. But the thing about the crap table is so interesting, and I've taught a lot of people how to play craps. And if they start out and they lose, and you know, you need patience, you need resolve, and you know, you can have 55 terrible minutes that are erased in 5 good minutes. All it takes is 5 good minutes. And the great thing about craps is you're on the high wire. When will you fall off? Can I get to the other? It's ongoing. And like I say, I've only been around 3 or 4 roles in my life that went a half hour or longer. But boy, oh boy, those were You believe in miracles.
I was just going to say, when you hit the number, how many times do you hear people scream, do you believe in miracles?
They do it. You know, it's so funny because there's a great communal feeling at a craft table. So if I show up and you know, some people know who I am, they'll either throw out, do you believe in miracles? Or they'll come up with, you know, like unreal, which is how I call it when Malcolm Butler intercepted the pass in the Super Bowl that Russell Wilson threw. But my favorite is a pit boss. A few years ago, I was had the dice for 15 or 17 minutes, and I'm rolling a number of points, and everybody's really happy and excited. So I get like seventh or eighth point in a row, and the pit boss says, he did what? Which is my call of the Antonio Freeman catch or Brett Favre in 2000. So I looked at her and I said, you got to be kidding me. She said, no, I'm a huge Packer fan.
Oh,
so
that's
what the craft table is about. It's a communal feeling. You're all in the same boat, except for the guys betting that don't, but they're going to be blown out of there for a couple of minutes. And it's as much fun as you can have.
Al, you're
that's
the best.
Awesome.
Have so much fun this weekend, okay?
Thanks, Al.
Okay, guys.
There
you
go.
Anytime.
You
love
got it. Al Michaels is the best. He's the best. Like, who would have ever thought that talking about Miracle on Ice would be talking about a tutorial on the craps table?
And just how important it is to have those dice for 17 to 20 minutes.
By the way, also really good is the best of Cutler. Cutler steals the show yet again. I'm told there was gold on the Very Cavallari Show. You'll hear that coming up next.
What is your name, please?
Waddle and Sylvie.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
We'll have what to watch for a little bit later in the show. Want to play some stuff from Very Cavallari as Jay. This is what did you use to dub this show, or did Jay make the comment?
Barely Cavallari?
Barely Cavallari.
He blamed that on us last time he was in. He said he never said that. He said we said that. I'm going to say I don't know the true origin of it, but I don't believe I was the one that came up with
Jay
it.
Jay stole the show again. You could have watched the Bulls, or you could have watched this.
I watched both.
Okay.
How about that?
You watched it in person, the Bulls game.
I watched the Bulls in person, and then I came in this morning and watched Very Barely Cavallari. And guys, the Cavallaris, the Cutlers, they went on vacation.
The Cavallaris.
They didn't really go on vacation together.
It was Chapman, didn't
it? No. That was a
this
while ago.
She
took Jay to the Emmys, to L.A. with her. Ooh. To the Emmys. She's getting ready to host all the Emmys pre-show on E! And while they were doing one of the shows, Jay got behind the director's camera and wanted to become a director.
Look who it is.
It's Jay Cutler.
This is how you're listening to her, and this is how you can call camera.
All right, well, let's get right to it.
So who's running the whole show here? Where's that guy? Maybe he could be a mentor for me, you know? I don't even need monitors. I can visualize what they're seeing through the lens.
I'm glad that he's able to see this side of my world, because it's a large part of my world, and it's not every day that he gets to see the work that goes into it.
He's so hot. How's the...
I think it's Jay Panaro. Can you hear me? Yeah.
So her co-host was asking Kristen how Jay's David Ross is.
Oh, his Grandpa Rossi.
His
really?
Grandpa Rossi is. Really? And he's like, you know he can hear you, right? Okay. So then they're out and about in L.A. and they're about to go somewhere, and one of Kristen's one of her girls decided to pop out of her shirt, and Jay said, you know, let's keep that inside.
So okay, we're gonna go home, get IVs and nails. There's somebody coming to give me a pedicure.
Can we keep that in while we're going?
God, honestly,
we're gonna buy bras.
I can't wear a bra with this.
Maybe we should get different boobs. Different shirts that maybe are less.
I honestly can't with you.
Well, they're not for everybody.
Less revealing.
They're not for everybody.
They're not.
They're going to get IVs and nails done.
So then they go to get these IVs. They're in their hotel room or wherever they're staying. They get these
IVs.
This
is the best part of the show.
And this is the best part when Jay almost poops himself.
Now my face feels really hot. I'm like on fire right now.
Oh.
Is that normal?
Yeah, that's the magnesium.
I got really hot in my back and then my bottom.
Oh my God, like I'm still on fire.
I literally thought I pooped myself.
I can't believe you just sat through that and didn't say anything.
Well, what are you going to say? Hey, I might have pooped myself?
I can't believe
Like, I just was going to sit here until everyone left. Hope for the best.
What if it starts smelling like
willing to take that risk, I guess.
Oh, my God.
We got to talk to him about that.
Was that from the IVs? Is he talking about?
I don't know.
Yeah, the IV makes you feel that way. Really? It's like, wow. Yeah.
Craziness. All right. A couple Bears got cut today. And they're veterans who have contributed to this team over the last couple of years. We'll tell you who in 2 minutes.